Okay, I'd like to go into the what we did last time. I'd like to go into it a little bit deeper. We said that the Ben Noach, for him, the permit, and there's a word in Hebrew, I think it's a good one to get used to, because it's a very halachic term, and it's used very often in halacha, and it also has philosophical consequences. That term is, in Hebrew, it's mer, okay? A matir is a permit. That means that something that gives you the right to do something. All right? Like we say that in order to pray, you can't just pray. You have to have a permit. Okay? The permit is when you begin with the praise of God. You can't just ask God for things you want. Yeah, there's a permit. Is you have to first praise, have the introductory blessings of praise where you recognize and you think into the concept of the Creator, then you have the right to ask. So this word matir, a permit, it comes up very much in halacha. And over here as well, we have the that which gives the Ben Noach the permit to eat meat is the death of the animal. Now, before that time, he has no right to consume the flesh of the animal, to rip off a limb and to consume it. Now, by the Ben Israel, the permit is not the death, but the permit is the ritual slaughter. Okay, I hate to use the word ritual because it's not the halachic slaughter. The halachic slaughter of the animal. Now, the question, of course, is why the discrepancy? Why is there this distinction? I think the reason is that, let's take the case of the Ben Noach first. The case of the Ben Noach really is perfectly logical, because the concept, as we mentioned, is that a person has no right to simply express his control over nature. And therefore, God limited man and obligated him to experience this limitation by not just taking an animal and just ripping off the flesh and thinking that he has total power and control over everything. Now, he has to respect the fact that there are other existences, and this is God's will, that this animal during its lifetime cannot be eaten. Okay. Now, so therefore, since that's the case, it's perfectly logical that it's during the animal's lifetime. Once it died, it ceases to function as an animal, and then it is permissible to partake of the flesh. Okay, so the Ben Noach situation is perfectly logical. But by the Ben Israel, it doesn't really work out that way, because by the Ben Israel, it's the slaughter itself which gives the person the permit, even though it still is, for a moment or so, it still is breathing, all right? So, and we said practically, of course, it's not the concept of practicality here. It's the idea that the halacha teaches us. So you see, by the Ben Israel, apparently, it's a different kind of a thing. The violation of taking the living animal by the Ben Israel is not the same, not quite the same, as it is for the Ben Noach. And I think the reason is fairly simple. Because in the case of the Ben Noach, where there are only the seven, so then the violation of taking the limb has to carry the idea, has to have the idea that he, the philosophical concept, that he cannot simply, he doesn't have limitless rights in this existence. He has to recognize the authority of the Creator. Whereas for the Ben Israel with the 613, it is built into the system, the recognition of the Creator. Of course, there, it's not just seven. So there, the law of the living, of removing the limb of the living animal was converted into a prohibition as to when a person is permitted to eat. So therefore, it's a different kind of a concept. It's basically a restriction on the individual's appetite instinct. All right? So the function, there are two different functions. With the Ben Israel, it's a restriction on his appetitive instinct. With the Ben Noach, it's more than that, not just a restriction on his appetitive instinct, but it also carries a philosophical concept of the recognition of God's jurisdiction upon this earth. All right, so that would logically explain why they are not the same for the Ben Israel as they are for the Ben Noach. The Ben Israel doesn't need that with the 613 system. Every move he makes contains the concept that everything is under God's jurisdiction. So that's why it wasn't necessary. So the law was converted into simply a restriction on the appetitive instinct, whereas the Ben Noach has a double function. It's a restriction on the appetitive instinct, so it is a recognition of God's authority. Okay. Now, that explains the differentiation. Now what I'd like to do is, at this point, you know, I'd like to take stock. I think we've gone enough, and we will go further, of course, in the Talmud and come up with new concepts as we go along and see the scholars discuss the issues. You'll see new concepts, but we have reached a point now where we could move back and let's take a look at the entire picture, okay? You can't do that when you start. That's when people like to do it. But what you have to do first is study the area, and then once you've studied it, then you're in a position to categorize and to understand how these seven laws... Now we're ready to talk, okay? So what I would like to point out now is, that if the seven laws, I'm going to start with one question, though. All right. My question is as follows. The question is, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. Let's leave the question for a moment. Let's just do the categorization. Okay. The categorization is as follows. If we take let's take the seven laws, and what do they? Can we break them down into components? In other words, can we group them? It seems to me at this point we certainly, because if we take a look at the law of stealing, and the law of limb of the living animal, okay, we see there is a common denominator there, and that is that the law of stealing is, as we said, Adam the first had this law, even though there was nobody else. And we explained, because the concept is, stealing is a violation of the rights of man on this earth. God gave him only rights to his property. And Adam the first had to have a permit to take anything from the world. So again, it's the same concept. The concept is recognition of God's authority on this earth. So the God's authority is recognized insofar as properties are concerned. In other words, you cannot take another human being's property. And the same concept, God's authority is recognized insofar as the animal kingdom is concerned. Now you cannot just go over to an animal, which God created, and just take its limb, okay, while it's alive and functioning. All right. So those two come under the same heading, but they're different expressions. Now, if you think a moment, you'll see there's a third one that would come under that same category. This is taking of a human being. There again, it's the same concept, that God has endowed every human being with a right of existence, and therefore he ought to infringe on his right of existence and take his life. So you see the same concept of God's authority is expressed through three different areas, in taking a human life, in the life of an animal that was to kill an animal for food, that was only by Adam the first. But after Noah, there is no violation in taking the life of an animal. However, while it is alive, you cannot simply use it as an object of food. And the third thing is stealing. A person has to recognize God's authority insofar as rights, human rights of property. So these three, you see now, when we look at them now, we see they all come under one heading. As a matter of fact, we're in a better position to answer a question that we raised, I believe, a long time, quite a while ago, and that is, we say there are seven, but then the Torah authorities knew that there were seven. This was carried down accurate from Sinai, that there were seven, and the question was, what about the Ben Noach's violation insofar as grafting trees, okay? That's called in Hebrew kelayim, All right, the creating the hybrid animals and vegetation. So the question was, why doesn't that count as an eighth? But now you can see very that that is merely an extension of the law of the limb of the living animal, because it is a recognition of God's authority insofar as the species are concerned, and it is a recognition of man's limitation in this existence as far as distorting that which nature has created. Okay, so he cannot do that with regard to vegetation and with regard to the animal kingdom. And we're going to get back to this, because at this point we have not really gotten to the true philosophy of these laws. We just made one. It's the first stage, and I'm going to show you in a while why there is another stage. Okay, but meantime, for all intents and purposes, right now, this categorization is very good. So we have three basic expressions of the same philosophical concept: man's recognition of God's authority on this earth, insofar as taking life, property of somebody else, or the interfering with the animal's existence while it is alive and using it for food. Okay, so that takes care of basically extension of the hybrid. Okay, so but three out of the seven are taken care of. Now, the hybrid case, of course, is not as serious as the animal, as taking a limb from the animal. That is not that does not incur the death penalty. So that's why it is an extension. And the reason for that, the logic for that, is very simple, because in taking the limb of the animal, one is directly interfering with the process of nature. But in creating hybrids, that's a halachic structure already. Halachic structure is not the same as, in other words, the philosophy is not inherent in the case. You're not really violating anything. But God said he structured a mitzvah, he structured a commandment to reflect that concept. So it's a structured law. Okay, I'm just pointing that out for those who are curious. But therefore, that's not punishable by death. It's not part of the seven, all right? Although it's a mention and a violation of one of the seven. But it's not one of the seven. The only one count the seven are the ones that incur the death penalty. Now, we have three out of the seven in the one category. Now, what other grouping do we have? We have, of course, the major grouping, the primary grouping, which is recognition of God. Now, recognition of God, interestingly enough, is expressed in the violation of idolatry, and also in the violation of blasphemy. So you see, those two come under the second heading, which is recognition of God. Recognition of God is twofold. First of all, it is the denial of any kind of physical reference or association to God's existence, all right, that God is completely removed from the physical. Not only is he completely removed from the physical, we in relating to him cannot use a physical being that in any way casts some kind of an idea that God has some kind of physical existence. So that's idolatry. Okay, so that we understand that. The second one is, even if you accept and you deny idols, but if you have a mistaken notion of God, and relate to God is on an infantile level where one is angry at God, and one blasphemes, and this we went through at length when we did that whole area. I'm not going to go through it again. But basically, it means the person has an infantile notion of God. Then also, and this notion comes to expression through an act of blasphemy, that also is punishable by death. So there you have two laws under the same category. Recognition of one is denial of false God. Two is a wrong idea in relationship to the true God, which is blasphemy. So now we see we have already three under one category, two under another category. That's five. Okay. Now, there is one other one, which is in a category by itself, and that is the sexual restrictions. Because the sexual restrictions are the restriction of the sexual instinct, and is a separate category, which means to say that, again, this is God's mandate to human society, in which he states the society in which there is no sexual restriction, but sexuality is rampant, that kind of promiscuous society is simply not worthy of existence. So that's why there may be a restraint on the sexual instinct. And those are the six cases which are which constitute the sexual violations. Okay? That is in a separate category. Again, as we mentioned before, restriction of the instinctual is also expressed, of course, in the case of the limb of the animal, but that is not the primary purpose of the commandment. That's a secondary benefit. And one of the scholars changed, instead of talking about reasons of commandments, he always spoke in terms of benefits of commandments. And the reasoning for that is very logical, because if I say this is the reason God gave the commandment, that means I know God's reasons. God's reasons are not so simple, okay? But if I say the benefits of the commandment, that's something else, because God, in his infinite wisdom, when he created a commandment, there are many, not just one benefit, there are many benefits derived from the commandments. So this Talmudic scholar always felt that it's more appropriate to speak of the benefits of commandments rather than reasons, because he felt that reasons are too haughty already to see why God gave this. We may not be correct. Our chances of being correct in that are not that great. But he felt what we should do is remove ourselves a little bit more. In other words, hug the ground a little closer, be more secure, and say benefits of commandments. There we have a better chance, because there certainly are multifarious benefits from every commandment, as many benefits. So I'm just pointing that out to you, that many times it's more appropriate to speak of the benefits of commandments. But over here, we, in our case, one of the benefits of course, of not restricting the appetitive with regard to eating is certainly that man learns self-restraint, which is the essence of the sexual prohibitions, and of course, as I said, it's a byproduct, a benefit of the restriction with regard to removing the limb of the animal, the living animal. So therefore, if we take a look at the six that we have, they really fall under three categories. One, recognition of God, which has two forms, two expressions, two laws. Two, recognition of God's authority on this earth insofar as our daily activities are concerned. And there you have three expressions, three laws. That's five. Then you have the next category, the third, which is restriction of the sexual instinct, that it cannot be... Okay. It's very interesting. The psychoanalyst Sigmund Freud, there are accounts of societies in which there were no sexual restraint, and he says those societies were doomed because all the energy went into the sexual activity, and they never were able to accomplish anything, and eventually they just were completely lost, went out of existence. So that certainly is the I would put that in the class of a benefit of the laws of the restrictions of the sexual. That the Torah's philosophy is that without that restriction, no society can have it reduced to spending his life in the animalistic. Okay, so those are the three categories. Then, of course, there's one law which we didn't mention, and that is the law of courts. But that, of course, doesn't need a category, because that is simply the implementation of the other six, as you understand. So basically, it's the implementation of justice. And we'll see as we go on that this last one, we didn't go into this last one yet as much, so we're just going to leave it as that, all right? But actually, there's a little more to it than that also. It's not just the practical. We'll see as we go through the Talmud that there's something deeper there also. But right now, for our practical purposes right now, we'll just leave that as the implementation of the other six. So at least we have a working framework, working definitions with regard to the seven laws, and now we have a much better understanding of how they work. But we aren't finished. and here comes the question. Okay. The question that should be asked at this point is the following. Someone should say like this, that if in truth the eating of the live animal is because man has no right to interfere with the animal's existence while alive to detract from its function, because it too has a function, if that is true, then why is the prohibition only in terms of eating the limb? Why isn't the prohibition to remove the limb from the animal? Okay? But now, you know very well that, you know, halacha is extremely precise, extremely precise. That's the beauty of halacha, that God didn't just leave us with these, unguided with these questions like other religions have, where they simply have to go into some kind of a trance to try to figure out what's proper to do and not to do. No, no, no. God gave us a system that's very accurate and detailed, and this is what God wants. And even if we have certain points are debated, there's a system how to resolve the debate and what to do. And there's never a point where we simply are lost. We don't know what to do. The system takes care of all possibilities, even error and even loss of material, and how to regain it and how to function in the case of arguments, okay? That's the main law, of course, the famous law is that we go according to majority ruling. So we're never lost. If we have a debate, and all scholars debate every issue, just like scientists debate, so scholars are always in debate, but there's a way God told us what to do when we have a debate. So we are never at a loss as to exactly to do. The system covers everything. So the question, now you know very well that, again, that the seven laws are punishable by death. Which means to say that if a person does remove the limb of a living animal and eats it, he incurs the death penalty. But let's say he removes the limb of the living animal but does it. Okay? So then what happens? He doesn't incur the death penalty. It's not a violation of one of the seven. Did he do something righteous or evil? That's a different story, because we said Maimonides mentions not everything that is permissible is necessarily good. Everything that is prohibited is necessarily bad, but everything that is permissible is not days watching television and drinking beer. It's permissible. But is it good? No. He's not getting closer to God. So this we know already. But nevertheless, why is it that the Torah only said that the seventh, this law of the limb of the living animal is only if you remove the limb from it? if the definition, if it's really interfering with the animal's existence, and God wills this animal to exist, and while it's alive, you cannot interfere with it. So it would seem to me the prohibition should be, neither care if you didn't eat it. If that is the violation is to interfere with the existence of this animal, which has a function, then anyone that did so, remove the limb of an animal, would, in my opinion, be involved in the major violation, and could, under certain circumstances, incur the death penalty. Okay? Because he broke one of the seven. Nevertheless, the Torah does not say that. The Torah says it's only if he consumes the limb of the living animal that he incurs the death penalty, even if he didn't remove the limb. Okay? As the Tosafists say, even in the time of Adam it would be possible to have this violation. If the limb of the animal was, if the limb of the animal, for instance, fell off during its lifetime, so then he would have the same prohibition. So it's the consuming of the limb, not the ripping off of the limb, which is prohibited. This seems to us as not properly being formulated. Okay, if we would formulate, we're ripping off a limb. That's what an Arab person would say. But God saw fit to do differently. He said, no, it's not the ripping off. It is the consuming of the limb. So why? Why should this be that way? That is a serious question. Of course, this immediately removes the common notion, which people think that it is a kindness to animal law, because were that the case, then certainly it would be formulated in terms of removing the limb, not in terms of eating the limb, okay? But you see the way the law is formulated is not in terms of removing the limb, it's in terms of consuming the limb, okay, that has reached this point and followed along with all the analysis that we've done so far would certainly be justified in raising this question. Okay. If there's anybody that would like to tackle it, I'll certainly be happy to have them do so. I'm not going to restrict the answer to myself. But if you'd like to, you can tell me what you think on it, or I'll go a little further. Okay. Let me raise another question. All right. See. Now, I'm going to have to use an old Yiddish expression, which is, we say in Yiddish, when I'm going to put it a little anglicized, but in Yiddish, they always say when they get to an area in learning Talmud, they say, you have to hold cup, okay? Cup means head. It means you have to, when you come across a piece of Talmud where sometimes you have to hold one concept and another and then hold on to it until you finally get to the answer. I think David always mentions that we always go on a long journey. Okay, so that's called hold cup. So let's just hold this question over here and let's take another question and hold on to it. The other question is that we said from our Talmudic analysis that man, the reason why man could not, in the time of Adam, kill any of the species is he could not interfere with the other species, okay? Because they have existence, and he couldn't interfere with them, he couldn't kill them. And this later was reduced to consuming the limb of the from the living animal. And that, we said, follows naturally from the way the verses are formulated, especially. It almost cries out this interpretation, where the verse says in Genesis 9, 3 and 4, you see how beautiful it is for you to eat, which means to say you are not restricted anymore. You don't have to, you're not restricted from taking the life of the species. But it says, but there's a big but over there in verse 4, and that is big exclusion. Exclusion is, but you cannot eat the limb of the living animal, okay? Which means to say it's a reduction of the original law. Originally, you couldn't exercise any control over the species by taking its life. Now we're reducing that to the limb of the animal. Okay. And then it says again, and then you see how verse 5 follows again. That what is verse 5? Verse 5 is, but your blood for your souls I will seek out. Okay? I will seek out, and then at verse 6, the spilling of human blood, which again is, as we said, is the same concept, that our activity is restricted in because of God's authority. And you notice the way God says it, I will search it out, I will seek it out, which means to say, I am the authority here. So the spilling of blood is a violation of God's authority, again, as we explained, it comes under the same category. Let's get back to this second question that I want to raise. That being the